Reality Daily listeners, what is going on? This is Jeremy here. We are talking all things Survivor 46, Episode 4. And he may not have won $1 million, but he's won my heart. It's my co-pilot, Wyatt. Wyatt, we're talking Survivor today. What's going on?
Listen, I appreciate the introduction, but I got to cut to the chase. This episode fucking sucked. And this season is, like, not looking great. Now, it's hard to really, like, give it that, like, nasty scarlet letter because two-thirds of the cast still hasn't played. But this is the equivalent of when somebody's blowing your phone up and they will not stop blowing your phone up. And you finally pick it up, and whatever they're going to tell you, whatever they've been dying to tell you, could have been a text or could have been an email. This episode could have been a Paramount Plus exclusive. We knew the result, and I mentioned it last week, when you basically remove Randon from the game, but do not let this tribe go to tribal, you put a real risk that the next episode is going to be incredibly boring, and we had to fill 90 minutes with mostly shit. And they tried their best, right? They gave us hilarious, or what they thought was going to be hilarious, segments from Sigga. They had, you know, Nami talking a little bit of game, kind of saved the episode in that regard. And then we had a second reward challenge. But Jeremy, this episode sucked.
Yeah, you know, if you really think about it, like, the first four episodes of this season, not a whole lot has happened, and the people that have filled in that time are all out of the game. Like, it was, you know, the first episode was heavy on Jelinski, and then he went home. The second episode was heavy on Banu and Jess. Both of them are now gone. The last two episodes have been very heavy on Banu, and he's been gone. I think, I don't know if the math is real on this, but I've seen, like, some tweets and all that. They're like, Banu has more confessionals than, like, Parvati had in her winning season. Like, and it's only been four episodes. Now, granted, the episodes are longer. Yes, like, it's obviously editing is a little different now. But it's just, like, we've had so much time towards these people that are not really central to what is still going on in the game. And that has been, I guess, the biggest critique of the new era is that we see these, like, tribal councils early on where people don't have votes and all this and that. But it's created for a very slow start to the season. And, yeah, we haven't seen two-thirds of the cast really play. We did get to see a little bit with Sigga, though, and a little bit with Nami. And there does seem to be a little bit of drama on both those tribes. So do you want to start talking about those two tribes, and then we can discuss the rest of the episode in Yanu?
Sure.
All right, we'll start off with Nami, as we have in the previous episodes. There's the least amount of screen time for Nami this week, but the game is starting to evolve at Nami. You know, Randon gone home. They didn't go to tribal council for it, but they are starting to realize that the game is needing to be played now. And Tevin starts to get these bad feelings about Soda. And the reason behind that is more, you know, oh, Soda's so social. Soda, you know, is talking with everybody. And if she's talking with everybody, then she may not be my number one. You know, what do you think about Tevin's read here? Because it's not the right read. Like, Soda hasn't said, I'm targeting Tevin. You know, so it doesn't really make sense for Tevin to target Soda. What did you make of that scene in Tevin's position in this all in this whole thing?
I could be proven to be a complete fool in the next week's episode or in the coming weeks, but I really felt that this was Tevin basically throwing the producers a bone here and just giving them a little bit of devil's advocate here. I really think that Tevin has no desire to actually target Soda. I think that this was probably like him just, you know, thinking out ideas, maybe saying, hey, like, we got to have some type of storyline here, so let me talk about maybe doing this betrayal. You know, when he talks to, like, Liz about it, I think that's more just so trying to keep Liz in the loop of what's going on so she doesn't think that she's being targeted by Tevin and tries to spearhead something around him. I really think this was a very crafty narration from the production company. I really do not believe that Tevin is actually targeting Soda, and I believe that this will be a nothing story in the coming weeks.
You know, maybe it's not a coming week story, but maybe it's a long-term story. Maybe it justifies why Soda is targeted a little bit later on. You know, because from what we've gauged so far, you know, there's no reason for Nami to really be targeting one another. But Hunter is also going to be able to talk about Soda and her relationship with the tribe. And Hunter is very pro Soda gotta go to. What do you think of Hunter's position in the whole mommy tribe right now?
Yeah, I'm interested to hear why Hunter would believe that. I mean, like, there's no way that he can think that Venus or Liz are better long-term. Soda's benefit, I think, is that she probably has a better chance to, you know, ingratiate herself with some of these other tribes like Yanu and Siga in a way that, from what we've seen, the little bit that we've seen from them, it does seem that Liz comes off a little bit, you know, full of herself in terms of talking about her wealth. And Venus has not been able to ingratiate herself in the tribe, and that's probably has something to do with her personality and how that's meshed. And it very well could happen with these other two tribes. So I just really feel like this is just a complete decoy situation. They're just fleshing out ideas, I guess. You know, I think it probably is like Tevin and Hunter being like, hey, just so you know, like, I'm your number one. Soda, on the other hand, you know, she's expendable despite her being with us. I really think this is just a lot of, you know, interesting editing to fill a episode that really needed stories.
Yeah, I think with Nami, you know, we didn't hear from Venus in this episode. Obviously, we would think that Venus would want to target Soda. But yeah, there's been a lot of, you know, like empty scenes on Nami. It's like, you know, it's there and we know about it, but we don't really know how it's going to play out. And it's because this whole season has been about Yanu up until this point. Now, in a week or two, when we get to Emerge, maybe these storylines will start to perforate. But right now, it's like, okay, what do we do with this? Like, what do we make of this? And honestly, like, the way that I see it is this Nami tribe is doomed. Especially, like, if Tevin and Hunter really want to target Soda. Like, let's say, for instance, Soda goes next week. I think Nami's screwed. Because Venus is flipping. Liz, I mean, we'll probably stay with Nami, but she's not someone that can really team up with other people. She's probably someone that you could look at as an early merge boot and be like, yeah, we could all vote for Liz. She doesn't have an idol. You know, no one's going to play an idol for her. You know, so she could be an early target in that regard. But as, like, there's just a lot of, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to target Soda. So they really need to keep Soda. And I hope you're right for Tevin's sake, that he's kind of just throwing production a bone so that they can get some content out of the Nami tribe. But yeah, I mean, Soda is very, I guess, aloof to the fact that people are trying to throw her name out. Maybe it is a decoy, but she seems to be, I'm with Hunter, I'm with Tevin, we're a solid three. If we ever go to tribal, we'll be good. And the thing is, that's about as simple as Nami's game needs to be right now. They're winning challenges. They have the strongest person in the game in Hunter in terms of challenges. And there's really no need to be scrambling. Nobody has the idol because it went home with Randon when he walked away last week. So this tribe really has nothing going for them in terms of storyline. So I could see why your theory is where it's at right now.
To your point, though, it's like when you win in the way that Nami has, and you really haven't been able to play the game in terms of voting people out, but yet you are seeing people go, I can see that maybe driving people stir crazy. So I'm almost talking myself back into to Tevin believing this could potentially be a legitimate theory of his, just because, you know, he could just go stir crazy. But I agree with you that I really think Nami is doomed, especially if Soda does go, or Tevin or Hunter for that matter, because I really think that this is lining up to be a very strong Siga dominated merge. And that's unfortunate because they are without a doubt the most boring tribe by a fucking mile.
Well, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with that, especially when you take into account what happened in this episode, which was a very interesting thing. I don't really think we've ever seen something quite like this that happened with Siga this week. Now, we've seen people try to trick people with idols and all of this and that. But Siga, Jem has the beware advantage. They went on a group hunt, I think it was in the last episode, And Jem found the Beware Advantage, and she ultimately, and I guess that was back on day two. It was like a flashback scene. And then they said, oh, like she's going to go look for it at night. And she found it at night and found out that, you know, she can only, you know, activate this or do more with the advantage once her tribe loses a challenge. And if they don't lose a challenge, there'll be further instructions. So it leads us to believe that Sega is not going to be going to tribal anytime soon. Let me ask you this, like, just historically speaking, is Sega the weakest undefeated tribe ever?
Yeah, probably. I mean, like, I really felt like they were going to be the disaster tribe coming into, like, after episode one, because I really thought it was going to be Nami at first, and then when I saw Nami was winning, I was like, oh, okay, I think that Jolinski going home is just kind of like a one-off, and I really think it'll be Sega going forward. And that's not been the case at all. But they seem so beatable, especially when we look at that reward challenge earlier. They just are able to overcome, and I think it's more due to the other tribes' negligence in Yanu more than you know, a pro Sega thing. But yeah, they don't seem like they're that strong in challenges.
I don't think they've won a challenge yet. I think they've always finished in second, and they lose this reward challenge. Where they could have won 10 or 5 to 10 fish for the tribe. Maria struggles in a portion of the challenge, and, you know, they come to talk at camp and they kind of cheer Maria up. I just wanted to mention that. I don't think I have much else to say about that. Maria didn't really have, she had a backstory confessional. She talked about how she's an immigrant, and, you know, so that leads us to believe that Maria could be a deep in the game character. But also, we've noticed that since episode one, I think, when she went on that journey and she got the extra vote, and, you know, she's in a really good position in the game right now. I don't think anyone's trying to target her. But yeah, it's but then there's also the main thing that I wanted to talk about with Sega was this idol hunt search again, because Jem has taken this Beware Advantage and she's hit it in a different tree. And she does that because she knows that it's going to say dig below the tree. She digs it in a tree, Wyatt, with 1,000,000,000,000,000,000 ants, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, I love that they had a camera, like, in the hole as well. So you see, like, Tim, and I'm not sure if it was Maria or one of the other ladies, but there you see their head kind of peeking out there as they're scratching. Oh, that was a great move by production to go ahead and put a camera there. Yeah, I thought that this was kind of a weird move by Jim, because not only are they going to be digging forever and realize that, hey, it's probably been found in the way that you do see this episode, but, like, it's like, what was your grand expectation? Like, did you just want to, like, get your entire tribe tired? Now you've spent all this energy of your tribe digging before you go to an immunity challenge. Like, this could be detrimental. And eventually it will come out that Jim does have this, whether it is, you know, pre-merge, at merge, whatever. And, you know, maybe the people on the tribe will be able to say bygones have been bygones. But if you have to play it earlier, then later, then that really could cause a lot of distinction, especially if the people that really trusted you in this information and didn't necessarily think that it was somebody else like Tim were really, you know, vouching for you. They're going to be a lot more hesitant to do this. If Jim was going to do this, she needed to let a person in on it, preferably both women, if she is loyal to that women's alliance.
Well, she does kind of talk to Mariah about, oh, why is this Beware Advantage here if we're looking in the wrong place? And I think Mariah is the one that suggests, I think Tim hit it. And that is exactly what Jem is trying for when she makes this like contraption, this little mouse trap, if you will, to get the tribe to think that somebody else has a Beware Advantage. And that is, like, extremely, it's clever if it works. It's dumb if it doesn't. It's unnecessary entirely. There's a very good chance that Sega can go into a merge or a mergatory with all of the members intact without having to go to tribal council, but they have this one hovering secret. And that means nobody can trust anybody except Jem knows that it's her. And that is not necessarily a way that I would have played it, but I'm entertained.
Yeah, I mean, this is what they want when they cast people, right? They want people that are going to do these kind of devious things that are fun for TV, you know, letting the viewers in on a little secret that some of the players don't know. But it doesn't change the fact that it's a dumb move. Like, there's just no way that it's going to come out. Like, how can you think of a way that this can come out and be successful for Jim, like a net positive? Because I don't. I mean, if you want to play like a short-term game and say, hey, you know, it gets any type of potential you know, risk of Jim going out pre-merge away and put some of the spotlight on Tim. But from what we've seen, the little bit that we have seen, because it really has been the Yanu show throughout four episodes, but what we have seen is it seems like the women plus Charlie are really in control. So she shouldn't even be worried about that. This has to be more of a long-term play. And as we mentioned before, I think Sega is probably going to dominate the merge, but this is something that could derail that. And I just can't think of a way that this is actually going to even be, I can't even envision a situation where this could actually end up being a positive for Jim.
I think Jem is a little bored. And yeah, that's the thing about these tribes not going to tribal council. This is now, I think they're at day 10 at this point. They're essentially a third of the way done in the game without having to do anything. Day 9 is the boot. So this is around day 8, day 9. They're a third of the way in the game having not had to do anything. And they are just at this point, like, they are kind of just doing what they're doing, you know, and they've gone through the motions. And this is the first time we've really seen from Sega someone not going through the motions. And, you know, I'm curious to see how it goes for Jem, because I obviously, you know, the chances of this getting back to her, I think, are pretty good, because there's only, you know, if you're like Charlie, for example, you know it's not you. You trust Maria enough to where it's not her. Maybe you think it's Tim, but then when it's not Tim, who is it? And if you start this, like, paranoia, it could spawn someone like Tim the Flip. And a tribe like Yanu would love to have someone like Tim. You know, someone that is able to, you know, be a number for them. So I think that Jem, like, if she had to go back, maybe she does it again. But yeah, maybe I would have clued a person in just so I have at least a little bit of protection for when this develops, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's tough. But you're right. I mean, like, I think that it is just her being bored. And this is kind of what I mentioned, that it could be happening with Tevin as well. And I think that we are potentially shaping up to what could be one of the worst merges in terms of strategy, in terms of, like, quote unquote, perfect games that we've ever seen. Because you're going to have two tribes. They have been to at most one tribal, probably. And they very well may not go to any. Then you have a team like Yanu, who, despite the fact that they have been to so many tribals, they've really done almost no strategizing, right? Because the Jess vote was so easy. The Banu vote was so easy. I mean, you could argue the Jelinski was a little bit. But, I mean, that was a week ago. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you have people that really haven't even played. It's almost like you start the game at the merge in terms of, like, what their strategic acumen is, because they haven't had to deal with people lying to them or manipulating, or they haven't really had to lie to anybody else other than, like, what they believe is going to be, like, down the line. So I think that you could really see some, like, next level terrible gameplay at this merge.
I mean, or we'll see great gameplay, because it is, you know, finally time for people to start playing the game.
Yeah. I also have to say, before we move on from Sega, Charlie is the worst. I cannot stand him. When he's jumping off of that thing and he's yelling Taylor Swift, it just nauseates me. And I'm not a Taylor Swift hater. I'm not. I just feel like, if that's your identity, like, why are you on Survivor? Like, why do they cast this guy? Like, I get it. Like, listen, he's a Harvard athlete. He's a law student. There's a lot of reasons why he would be casted other than this. But it's just so irritating, especially when you listen to that Jeff Probst interview with Rob Cicino earlier in the season, where he talks about, hey, there's going to be no villains. And the way I interpreted that, I think, is different than most, where I think what he was saying is, like, we don't want the characters anymore. Like, we don't want people that are bringing on a facade just to be the villain. You know, villainous gameplay is just going to happen naturally based on the game. But he doesn't want people that are coming in there just to be the villain. And, but like, to me, I feel like Charlie's coming in there just to be the Taylor Swift guy. And that's irritating to me. Like, I don't want people to come in like with this notion that's like, this is the character I'm going to play. It just irritates me. And it really is making me sad, because we talked about last week, he's got a great shot to win, it seems, right? So.
Well, I also think too, like, part of it is the fact that Sega hasn't had to go to tribal council. We really haven't seen them have to strategize too strictly. And because of that, we're getting these, oh, Charlie's the Taylor Swift guy. Ben's the, you know, funny rocker vibes guy.
Yeah, but like, it's one thing when when Charlie is naming 100 songs at camp, that to me is fine. Because, you know, there's a lot of downtime, you're bored, yada, yada, yada. When you are running up the immunity challenge and yelling Taylor Swift, it just makes me want to torpedo you all the way back to America. It makes me so irritated. It's like, I would feel the same way about Ben. If Ben gets on that thing and he says, like, Stone Temple Pilots as he's jumping down, like, I would be irritated too. But he's not. Like, I just feel like I'm just so irritated that Charlie did that. It's such a minimal part of the episode, but it just makes me so irritated, because I feel like that is what I understand from what Jeff Probst says, is that he doesn't want it. He doesn't want people that are coming in with a narrative and say, I have to be this way. And that seems like, it seems like Charlie knows what he wants, what the show wants from him, and he's obliging by that. But it just irritates me that that would be what they would want from him.
Yeah, I think we're getting to a point to where it's just like, we're ready for something new to happen with this group. And it's just, I think that the way that the game is, like, the way that the game has been, is like, this is just how it's been. I don't think when they created the cast and the tribes for the season, I don't necessarily think they anticipated the game going this way, to have Yanu be a total disaster compared to the other two tribes. And I honestly think, like, it goes back to episode one. If they had not voted Jelinski out that first week and they voted for Jess instead, they don't lose that second challenge. Sega goes to tribal council. Then Randon probably gets medically evacuated. And then you got 5-5-5. And then maybe this challenge you lose, you know, Yanu loses again. Maybe you vote for Jelinski or Banu. But, you know, I think that would have changed the game completely, because you would have had, like, there would have been a Sega tribal council there. I'm just saying, from episode two, Sega would have lost that immunity challenge if Jelinski was there at 7'4" holding up that damn puzzle. And I feel like that changes the whole thing. But that's where it goes to show you, it's like, the players are in control of their game, and that's just how the nature of Survivor is. But one more thing with Sega. What did you think of this Mariah jumping scene? Like, why was it shown? That's more of why I want to talk about it. Not, it was a weird thing, but like, the way that they made it seem in the episode. Also, by the way, we got tree nail reads on both the reward and the immunity challenge. Love that. Love that little hat tip to, you know, OG Survivor. But I just thought that this was like a weird scene to put in there, because they didn't need to. Because what it made it seem like is, going into the challenge, they would have had to jump at the key and then grab the key. And obviously Mariah had to participate because she didn't participate in the reward challenge. So they made it seem like it was going to be that. But then when it turned into just jumping off, like, it was no big deal. Like, they could have easily cut that scene for something else, but it was put in the episode. Like, did you pick up on that? Like, why we're seeing this?
You know, normally I would say, hey, this is probably something that we should really pay attention to. Either they're going to lose and Mariah's going to be somebody that goes home, or this is maybe some type of like building arc where it's like, I'm overcoming my adversities and maybe this person goes deep into the game. But because of what we see with the Yanu tribe that we'll discuss later, and this really just was such a open and shut episode, I think they just looked for anything to put in there. And I think that because they've already exhausted the idol thing, there probably wasn't a whole lot of gameplay other than like, hey, You know, the girls are still working together. We're going to vote out Tim or Ben if we go to tribal, yada, yada. It probably wasn't a whole lot to talk about. They probably said, hey, let's just do something that's a little fun. That's a little, you know, humorous. And let's just do this Mariah jumping clip. But I agree with you. I thought it was going to be something that she was going to have to grab for the key. And I was just a little bit let down that that wasn't the case, because I would love the idea of like Mariah having to jump 3 or 4 or 5 times to be able to get it. I think that would have been fun, but I really think they just put it in there. I'm trying not to read too much into it because I just feel like this episode was so bad that it probably was just to just fill time and just have a little bit of humor in an episode that I don't feel like was very humorous.
I think I do think that it was more along the lines of what you said, but I do think that there is some long-term potential with Mariah with this scene. I don't think it's a winner edit or anything like that. Like, I think we saw with like Ben, you know, like Ben had like some winner edit material early on. But we did, I don't think we get that here with Mariah. But I do think that we are going to see Mariah in the ending. Like, she's feeling like an ending character to me.
Yeah, especially if you think that Sega is going to dominate this merge. You know, she's seems to be, at least from the little bit that we've seen, seems to be in the majority, because it seems like it's the women plus Charlie. And, you know, I don't necessarily foresee anything that's really going to shake that up too much. Because, you know, Nami's going to be broken, Yanu's going to be down to pits. I mean, I guess they could work together, but I would say unlikely. But yeah, I definitely think she's an in-game character. I mean, she could win. I don't rule her out or anything like that. I'm not going to read into this too much just because I do believe that this is probably just to fill airtime. But maybe they are just trying to give us a little bit more insight to her. I mean, same thing with Jim, right? Like, Jim got no airtime in the first couple episodes. But obviously, because of her finding that Beware advantage and what she does with it, she's going to get a little bit more in episode 3 and 4. So maybe they're just looking at this as like, hey, this tribe's won a lot. Let's try to give like individual moments to every person. And this also could have been why we saw Soda being targeted, seeing being shown, even if it doesn't end up happening. Because, you know, we've seen Hunter have his like hero thing. We've seen Venus, obviously. You know, they've shown Liz being a little bit condescending. They've showed Tevin do the narration. Now this is something where you kind of get an idea of like who Soda is as a player, even though it wasn't like, you know, from her mouth per se.
I feel like we've gotten a little bit of every person except like Tim. Like, we know Tim's a dad. That's all we really know about Tim. Maybe we'll get that next week, but for now Tim is just kind of there. But let's move on to Yanu. We start the episode with them, and it's like right after Jeff leaves camp, and they feel really good. And then Banu takes the second life that he's been given in the game by the survivor gods and immediately sacrifices it. That's not what to call it. This, like, Banu would have been fine in this episode. I genuinely believe it if he didn't tell them about the journey. That's all he had to do. Like, as bad of a player as he was, this was the one fatal error, because we saw how close Kenzie was to possibly going home, and I genuinely believe that there was that reality. And Q was able to kind of talk Tiffany into it, because, you know, and Tiffany was open to the idea. But when Banu says, I just sold you all up the river, that is like, Tiffany's like, no way. Like, why would I work with you at that point, you know? So, like, Banu's honesty, way, like, the most honest player in Survivor history. I call it the honesty. He's just so honest, so honest. And that is ultimately, I think, what signs his death sentence, because there is no coming back after that.
Yeah, but you don't believe he would have stayed if he kept this to himself, right? Like, you think he still gets voted out?
To be honest with you, Wyatt, I don't think so. Like, I genuinely, like, it would be up in the air, because I think if they were to go, like, assuming they go to tribal council, just like they did this time, you know, Q is probably thinking, okay, if I go for, like, if I'm able to get Tiffany to vote for Kenzie today, I know when we get to three, and if we have to go to tribal council again, I know Tiffany's going to keep me over Bonnie. And the chances of Tiffany keeping Q over Banu are way better than Tiff keeping him over Kenzie, because Tiff and Kenzie have obviously been close as well from the beginning. I do think that Tiffany is closer to Q, and I do think that if they were to go to tribal council again, Tiffany would choose Q. But that being said, at least up until this point in the game, but that being said, like, that is why I think Q would have tried for Kenzie if they had to go to tribal council, because Kenzie is an uncontrollable asset. I don't even know if these might have been the exact words they said in the episode. Kenzie is an uncontrollable asset, but at least with Banu, like, that's a vote for Q, and that's a vote that he knows he has. And yeah, he can probably cut Banu if they were to go to tribal council again, but that's Q thinking two or three steps ahead. But after Banu, like, kamikazes, like, there's no coming back from that.
I mean, I guess you could be right. I just don't foresee it. I just think that, like, what I think last week, and we talked about it, I think that Banu was going to go home. I think Q probably was, like, actually trying to get Tiffany to flip. And I think Tiffany probably told Q that they didn't show it, but she probably was like, I just feel like we need to keep with Kenzie. And because Q's a team player, I think he was going to go ahead and do that instead of going to Rocks, right? He's not going to risk his potential life in the game for that, right? So that's what I think was going to happen, and I don't think anything changed this episode. I actually believe that regardless of what Banu's intentions were, which was just to be honest, I do believe that he had a better chance of staying this episode than last episode if he had played it correctly. And I think the way that I would have phrased it if I'm Banu is being like, listen, like, they think Kenzie's in charge. She is going to go first in the merge if we don't get rid of her, and that's going to put you guys at a number disadvantage. But I have Ben and Liz that are open to working with me. We have to work together. Or if you really wanted to go a different direction, you could say, hey, Q and Tiffany, like, they think you're in a duo. You have to get rid of this other person in the duo, or they're going to target you guys at merge. I think there was a way that Banu could have spun it if he had any strategic intellect at all, but he didn't. So that's why I think that Q and Tiffany probably thought about this and probably said, hey, like, if Kenzie is the quote-unquote mastermind, she's probably going to get targeted. They're probably not going to work with us. So let's talk about getting out Kenzie. But I believe that they really just were so gung-ho on Banu going home that it's even that thought didn't even resonate with them enough to actually want to do anything.
Yeah, I think, but the thing is, Banu was never playing it right. Was never playing right. He was playing his game. And I just think that this was just so, like, Banu is, like, one of one casting. Like, I genuinely believe that we will never see someone like Banu again. It is very special to have someone like him, because he does create this very different kind of game. And maybe it's not the most exciting game. Definitely not. I don't necessarily think it was a boring game, that's for sure. There were moments where I was laughing. I was, you know, empathetic towards him. Like, he generated a ton of emotions when you're watching. And I think that's what makes for a good cast member. So I think that he was a good casting choice. I know there's a lot of people that are questioning the casting choice and all that. And yes, like, you want to see good gameplay. Like, good gameplay is exciting to watch. But so is bad gameplay. I get entertained by, like, if it was 18 people who all made the right decision at the right time with the right people, it would be boring. It would be a robotic game. And Banu made it to where it wasn't a robotic game. And it also kind of forces Tiffany, Q, and Kenzie to kind of change their game up. And they had to with Banu. And I think that, you know, we saw that scene where Banu was asking Kenzie to coach him about tribal council. And I just was like, oh my God. And Kenzie was like, Banu, I just want to lay down right now.
Yeah. And he storms off. Here's the thing is, like, and I mentioned it last week, I just think that Banu similar to what you said, one in a million casting, and this is somebody that I would like to see, not necessarily him, but like people like him, I don't mind seeing them on Survivor because they are so unique. And I just feel like right now what we're seeing in the new era, for the most part, are these people that are, you know, highly educated, or they are, you know, these people that like run their own business, or they work for, you know, a bigger passion other than like money, whether it was like their passion or their business or freedom, whatever it is. And that's fine and everything. And these people can produce great gameplay, great independent thinkers. But the people like the Banus, the people like the Keith Nails that I compared them to last week, these are the people that are almost like bombs in the game. Like, you have to work around them more so than work with them. And to me, that's just like fun to see. Like, I think the perfect Survivor season is like 12 people that like have a great concept of the game and know how to adapt and know how to think ahead. And then like 6 people that are like absolutely out of their mind. Whether they're like, you know, funny, or they're just like athletic meatheads, or there's somebody like Banu who's just like overly emotional, it doesn't matter. I just think that those people are really fun. Now, obviously, you want to find people that are kind of in the middle. Like, you want to find somebody like that's funny but also good at the game, like Yam Yam. You want to find somebody that's also a little bit crazy but good at the game, like a Carolyn. Like, that's what you want to look for. But I think that putting in somebody like Banu, I love the casting choice for him, and I really think that if they did a returning season, I have a hard time believing that Banu's not at least going to get a call.
That would make for a very interesting thing. But yeah, I mean, like, we've seen, I guess, the archetype of the, you know, out there player that has been cast. You know, we saw like Sifu last season kind of fit this role in the past. Like, we've also seen, you know, players like Carolyn, and but at least Carolyn, like you mentioned, was good at the game. You know, so yeah, there are certain people that I guess like the quote unquote like not good at the game, like the non-game bot, you know, we've also seen that Ryan from 43 is someone that comes up as a potential archetype sharer in this. Roxroy, you know, some people that you have to work around in order to get to the game. But yeah, the fact that Banu was this person this season, and he kind of was an agent of chaos in a way. He torched all of Yanu's game. Like, nobody on Yanu will win the season because of Banu. I genuinely believe that. I think that what he did, like, obviously with Jelensky, he voted out Jelensky. Obviously with Jess, voted out Jess. And then now with, before on his way out, Q, Kenzie, Tiffany have a much harder time ingratiating themselves with anybody at the merge. Now look, that's going to be the story of the season. You know, can Yanu find a way to rebound from the horrible pre-merge they had? And, you know, we saw that last season with the Lulu tribe, right? We saw Caleb and Emily, like, we were like, oh, well, they made good relationships in the swap tribes. Like, you know, maybe they'll have a chance. Emily survived a vote in the swap tribes. But then ultimately, you know, we saw them get targeted almost immediately by everybody because they're like, this dude's really good. Are they going to say the same thing about Q, Tiffany, Kenzie, whichever of them make the merge?
I think so. I think here's the thing that's interesting, right, is you have Kenzie, who's now been labeled as this like person that's running the tribe. Then you have somebody like Q, who's labeled as not only being part of a duo, but just from talking to him and seeing him throughout these episodes, you know, he comes across as like a team player and a leader, but he's not going to be playing from a leadership standpoint, right? He's not in power, right? He has to make a new team, and he has to kind of give up that coach role, and he has to be the player. You know, he has to be the person that's asking for advice, not the one that's giving it now. And I just don't know if he's got it in to be able to adapt. I would like to think he does, being a successful real estate agent, but you just don't know. He's going to have to really humble himself, and I'm just not sure if that will be able to fit in. And with Tiffany, I think she's probably the most likely to do well of the three, but she has also kind of played with this like duo type mentality. But, you know, for her, she has an idol as well. I think she's probably going to be the most mendable in terms of getting along with the other people from what we've seen. So she may do okay, but I definitely think either Kenzie, Q, potentially both of them are going to be casualties pretty early.
Perhaps. Let's go to Tribal Council. And this is like, I guess, and right before Tribal Council, I guess, Banu is starting to feel the heat. He's thinking, oh, it's probably going to be me. And he's right. And Tiffany straight up tells him, yeah, I'm voting for you tonight. And this was, I think, the right move for Tiffany. And there's no reason to lie. We know that Banu is loyal to a fault and honest to a fault. And we know he doesn't have a vote. And Tiffany's going to vote for him. What did you think about Banu getting on his knees, begging Tiffany for some help?
I loved it. I thought it was like, this is kind of what makes Banu unique. Like, most people would not do that. They say they will do anything to win the million, but they won't do that. I love that Tiffany was like, get off your knees. Banu, I'm going to walk away.
I'm not talking to you on your knees. I'm walking away.
Yeah, listen, sometimes you got to swallow your pride and, do anything you can to be able to survive. And listen, as much as people want to say, like, oh, Banu was a bad casting choice, show me how many people that have played Survivor in its whole history wanted as bad as Banu. I mean, this guy is yelling at God that his journey's ending. He's on his hands and knees. I mean, like, who wants it work? Just because he doesn't have strategy doesn't mean he doesn't want it. And you want people on here that want it like Banu does. Now, granted, maybe he didn't want the million. He wanted the million hearts. But he wanted to stay. And that's something that you don't see a lot of people really, like, put that much effort into, like, wanting to stay. I loved it from Banu. Like, he wanted to be there. He wasn't resigned to his fate. He fought to, you know, I want to say basically the bitter end. Until he's basically told by Tiffany, like, hey, you're going home. But listen, I loved it.
I will say that when they were going to Tribal Council and Banu was basically saying, I'm going to tell my story. No disrespect to Banu, but I was like, oh my God, like, I am, like, not, like, I just wasn't interested. I was like, I've heard enough of this. Like, it's time to move on. Like, I wish they kind of just went to Tribal Council as is and were just like, yeah. But what I didn't necessarily appreciate about this Tribal Council is that they didn't even vote.
Yeah, that's such bullshit. Because first and foremost, I mean, listen, they know that the producers know that, like, Q, Tiffany, and Kinski are not going to vote for each other. They know this because they've done the confessionals with them. They know they have the insight. But I don't feel like it's on them / Jeff Probst to expose that. You know, Jeff Probst oversteps his boundaries here and basically says, oh, well, you don't have an advantage, you know, clearly, by the way that you're talking. It's like, well, what about if he did? Like, what about if he was lying? What about if he went on that journey and actually won the thing? I mean, obviously, Jeff wouldn't do that, but you should always have that level of suspicion if you're cueing them. Like, they basically laid it all out on the table on a piece of paper, exactly what was going on. And on top of that, they didn't vote. And to me, it's like, listen, like, who gets their torch snuffed that doesn't get to vote? He is in the company of Jeff Varner and quitters. Like, what the fuck, Jeff?
Yeah. It bothered me.
It's not a good company to be in.
No, it's not. But I will say, Banu's Tribal Council compared to the others is also very, very different. But yeah, I felt that they should have said, okay, let's vote. Because what if Q wanted to vote for Kenzie? You know, what if Tiffany wanted to vote for Kenzie? Like, who knows? Like, they wouldn't have been given that opportunity. And now what it does is anytime that there is, like, an obvious vote, it's going to be like, oh, well, I don't know. And obviously, yes, Banu is a very unique situation. It's incredible that we're 46 seasons in and there's been 600 something tribal councils, and this one is still very unique compared to all of the ones that were before him. So I think that was pretty cool, but I still felt like they should have voted. And I will say, with Banu and his story, like, I was annoyed going into tribal council. I'm like, I really don't want to hear this, but it wasn't as, like, drawn out as I thought it was going to be. And I honestly felt like we got some form of understanding and maybe some closure about who Banu is and why Banu is the way that he is, talking about his extreme poverty, and then his success story in that. Like, you realize that, oh, like, he really didn't need the money. Like, homie has won the $1 million already, going from where he was to where he is now. And that is a success story in itself. And I genuinely think that is, like, that, like, that gave some understanding and some reason behind his actions. Did it do the same for you, or am I alone in this?
I didn't care because I had watched him for 3 episodes. I watched his preseason interview. I knew this stuff about Bonu. Nothing changed. I feel like if you're watching this at home, if you're touched by Bonu, I don't believe that this was what did it. Like, I think that you were touched because, like, this was kind of like somewhat kind of already been disgusting. It just felt like it was on repeat to me. And I get it. It's his swan song. It's his moment, etc. But yeah, I didn't care for it. But going back to what you said about people not voting, how many times have we seen, you know, people have to go to the voting booth to, like, find out if they have, like, won an extra vote or something because of some mystery advantage in the game. Now, you know, these three people know there's no chance of that. Not only does Biden not have anything, but they don't have anything that could come from that part. You know, you've seen even people, they don't even know if they won an advantage until they get to vote. So it's just irritating as well. You always go through the motions. Like, what's it take? It takes, like, another minute to vote. Like, fuck off. Like, I hated it. Hated it so much.
Well, now it's done. And I hope that with this Bonu storyline coming to an end, I hope that there is some momentum for the rest of the season. Because this was, like, we really did need this to end. We needed it to end last week in order for it to really let the rest of the season move on. And it should have been last week that this happened. And, you know, they could have figured out a way to, you know, change the season if they didn't want two people going on the same day. Like, they could have figured out a way to stretch the next 19 days out with.
Should have swapped.
Yeah. There could have been a swap, you know. But I do think that they decide preseason whether swaps happen or not. And I think they tried it with 45. They knew that we were going to do that, and they were going to see 46 if it was a little bit different. I think a swap would have been nice, but we didn't get it. And now we've got next week, and can Yanu win next week? Do you think that Kenzie, Q, and Tiffany as a trio can get it done?
I definitely do. You know, we didn't really talk too much about the immunity challenge, but, you know, Bonu was a big reason why it seemed like they lost because he forgot part of the challenge and everything. So, you know, you take him out of that. Maybe they're able to crush that. You know, they did a decent job in the challenge. I felt like they just happened to come in at the bottom. I also thought that Tim, like, broke his leg at one point when he fell on his ass on that buoy. Like, I thought he hurt himself really bad because he just had this blank face. But yeah, like, we've seen that the Sticky Tribe can definitely fuck up challenges. We saw it in the reward challenge. We almost saw it with his immunity challenge. So my guess is that Siga will go to tribal. I think that's probably why they spent so much time, you know, talking about Mariah. This episode, they wanted the viewers to know a little bit about her. And my guess is that we talked about that pretty much everybody but Tim has gotten a little bit of airtime, a little bit of insight to the personality. And that's because I think they're going to lose next week, and I think Tim's going to be on the hot seat. Will he go home? Probably, but I think that he'll at minimum be discussed as an option, and that's when we'll get a little bit of insight into him.
Yeah. Anything else to add before we sign off?
No, wraps it up. But, you know, listen, still optimistic on the season. I know I've shit on the episode a lot and the season as a whole, but like I've mentioned before, Survivor, even at its worst state, is better than, like, almost every other thing on TV. So I'm still, you know, very passionately going to be watching the rest of the season.
Amen. As will I, and as we will be talking about it here on Reality Daily. So be sure to like, comment, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and tune in next week when we will be talking episode 5 of Survivor 46. Thank you so much, and we'll catch y'all next week.